I do have to say to you, I come with a bit of a sad heart, only to the extent that I was really hoping that A&M would take it away nationally. You know, that's coming from a Baylor boy. But we don't ever stand a chance, so I root for A&M. Oh, golly. But I am in the Northwest, right on top of the Seahawks. So there you go. I get a reprieve. Everybody doing good? Enjoying your... I brought this weather to you. really, thank you, right. What I'm going to share with you today, I've already taught here at least twice, if not more. I did not author this. Give credit where credit is due. In fact, the guy who was best man in our wedding is the one who originally authored it. And I use it with permission. And I think it is absolutely one of the most insightful, best, I use it counseling tools, but a thing for to help you understand some of your own emotionality. How many of you understand or at least aware that many times the pain of the past affects the behavior of the present? It does. And we need to learn how to deal with it individually. We need to learn how to deal with it as a church because we don't. We really don't deal with it. I believe we're made in the image of God. And that means his DNA is our DNA. And that means our God is an emotional God. You and I are created as emotional beings. And we're also created to connect, which means every time we have some kind of connection, there can be positive responses and negative responses. Positive and negative. And if those responses, if we don't learn how to deal with those responses, if we don't learn how to deal with our own emotionality, we're going to get into a heap of problems. You know, there's kind of two extremes that operate in this area. One of them are those that don't have any control over their emotions, and they're the proverbial roller coaster. Do you know anybody like that? No elbows in the sides. The second one is those that think the key to emotional happiness is to be non-emotional. And they're the ones, something could blow up in front of them and they're just pan-faced and dead. And the reality is both of those extremes are faulty. We've heard it said you have to learn to deal with other people's emotions or their emotions will deal with you. And we have to learn not only how to manage our own stuff, but for better or for worse, we have to learn how to respond to the emotions of others. If we fail to understand other people's emotions, we're going to find ourselves either not being able to express true care and concern and comfort and love, or we're going to find ourselves being abused by their emotions. Now, I hope that's sinking into your thoughts. Painful emotions are inevitable. Shake your heads this way. It's not a matter of if we get hurt. It's only a matter of when we get hurt. So my question to you is, by way of introduction, what happens to the painful emotions that you experience? Do they dissipate with time? One in one ear, out the other? Maybe you can go to sleep and they'll kind of go away. How many of you have heard the expression, time heals? I'm going to show you that's not true. Painful emotions, unless properly processed, not only stay with us, but they accumulate. It has been said that emotions that are buried alive. They don't just linger, they accumulate. We call this place of emotional storage, we call it our heart. Your emotional reservoir. For lack of better terms, my friend David calls it an emotional cup. Now I want you to think about this. Emotions pour into your cup. But one thing you're immediately going to be able to see about a cup is that, and you can see it on your diagram. Anybody not have a diagram? Everybody has a diagram? Okay, good. Is that it has limited capacity. In other words, you can only take so much. And finally, you're going to max out. You're going to saturate. You're going to go like this when you turn and look at your partner. You're going to go, you know, cut it. Can't take anymore. I need a break. I'm saturated. And then the result, when you reach your emotional capacity, is that you begin to overflow. You begin to spill. We call it spillage. And you'll see some of that spillage on your own chart. Who do you spill onto? Those who are closest to you. Those you love the most. Those you don't want to hurt at all, but it still happens. Take a look at your diagram. Take the two, especially the two little notes. Put some stars by the two little notes at the very bottom. Limited capacity. Most intense emotions sink to the bottom of that cup, and from that place, they will affect all the rest of your emotions until they're properly processed. Most intense emotions to the bottom of the cup. Now, again, when I pause, it's not because I'm stumbling around not knowing what to say. It's because that's really important. I want you to just let it sink in for a moment. All right, I'm going to talk you through the five most intense emotions. And we're going to start from the bottom and work up. Because remember, the more intense go to the bottom. And we're going to start with pain at the bottom, hurt or pain. It's a very general term. The three biggest givers of pain within relationships. And just, you know, check your own heart and see if you've experienced any of these in your relationship. Number one is rejection. In fact, I've actually read books and studies where some people think nearly all your emotionality comes from rejection. Negative emotionality, excuse me, comes from rejection. Rejection, how many of you have experienced any of that? And the rest of you have trouble with lying. A second one is abandonment. And you can see how rejection and abandonment are somewhat similar. Abandonment. And the third one is betrayal. Rejection, abandonment, betrayal. Jesus said, in this world, you're going to have trouble. Everybody said amen. Yep. So look back at your diagram again. Rejection, abandonment, betrayal. And it drives pain to the very bottom of our emotional reservoir. All right, secondly, what's right above pain on your diagram? Anger. The most common expression of pain is anger. In fact, for some people, it is such a default response. It happens in a millisecond, and they don't have any idea they have a pain problem. All they think they have is an anger problem. So they go to anger management. That's where your courts will send you. You get caught doing your rage driving, they're going to send you to anger management. And that's okay. It teaches you how to manage anger, but it does not teach you how to deal with the source. How come you have this anger that always keeps bubbling up? Why is it just right there below the surface? And by the way, anger does not always mean you're yelling at the top of your lungs, red-faced. There's a lot of other forms anger can take. Let me just walk you through a couple of them for your own benefit. Impatience. Anybody struggle with impatience? Intolerance. That's a whole attitude, isn't it? It's an attitude that affects everything that you look at and think at, affects your perspective. Most of you know the term passive aggressive, right? That's where you use your passivity as your aggressive tool. And probably the most common of those is what we refer to as the silent treatment. You know, I know some passive aggressive people, they'll turn on that silent treatment and they won't talk to you for a month. Some of you are laughing because you know exactly what I'm talking about. In some respects, you're happier to have that response than have somebody yelling at you or swinging at you. I'm just trying to show you they're coming out of the same pool of pain. These are just different faces. Oh, here's one. Sarcasm. I remember when we got married, oh, Chester married us. I have some friends here that we have some common background, and so I throw out a name or two that it's for them because they know who I'm talking about. And one of the things he told us as we were sitting across the desk from him, he said, Bob and Laura, don't ever, two things to not allow in your home, in your vocabulary, in your conversation. Number one is the word divorce. Now, if you've been divorced, I don't mean that to heap. Don't feel any shame on that, okay? But this was his counsel to us. And the other is sarcasm. Sarcasm never benefits anybody because it always belittles someone in order for you to get your humor out of it. Sarcasm. Don't ever talk about divorce. You can talk about murder, but not divorce. And sarcasm. Here's another one. This is another face of anger. These are just alternate faces of anger. Procrastination. Don't always think of that in terms of anger. And I don't know that it always is sourced out of anger, but frequently. Let me also add, when we're looking at this area of anger, the emotion of anger, anger initially is a positive emotion because it alerts us to the fact that we've been hurt. But if it's left undealt with, unprocessed, it can escalate into bitterness, into hatred, and into other violent behaviors. Are we doing okay? I'm just kind of walking you through some of this cup. So at the bottom of the cup is what? Pain. Right above that, the most common expression of pain is anger. Number three, the third most intense, look at your diagram, is fear. Now again, I want you to begin to think of fear as another, an alternative expression of anger. Here's what I want you to see. Of pain. Fear is an expression of pain. Anger looks at the present and the past. I am mad, I'm angry over what is happening, what has happened. Fear looks towards the future, and I'm afraid it's going to happen again. I want you to know, fear is probably the biggest disconnector of faith. When you're not doing things in faith, 99% of the time you're doing them out of fear. I left a little opening there, 1%, because there are some extenuating circumstances, but usually your activity will be fear-based. What's the number one response mechanism, behavior mechanism of someone who is struggling with fear? I'll give it to you. It's control. It's another one of the faces. As you saw some different faces of anger, I'm going to give you some different faces of fear. It's control. Had a buddy call from in Netherlands. He's a Dutchie, Netherlands. He said, Bob, we just handed off this church to one of my spiritual sons, and he's done good for about a year and a half, but now I'm starting to get some communication back from some of the other leaders that he is so controlling. He just doesn't give us any flex, doesn't allow originality. He's just got to control everything. He's got to micromanage everything. What do we do? And this is what I said to him. I said, David, I'll be over there in about 2 weeks. And at that time, that's when I was going to be there, in about 2 weeks. And we will sit down with him, and we're going to find out what he is afraid of. Because when we can discover that and interrupt that, then we will deal with the mechanism, the root of the control. But I want you to see the number one face of fear is usually control. When you have people that have severe control issues, they are afraid of something. Most of the time, it'll be a fear of failure, a fear of rejection. If you really knew the truth about me, you'd reject me, so I'm going to control the narrative so that you don't really know the real me. Y'all doing okay? Let me give you a couple of other faces of fear. Withdrawal. People who withdraw, so they'll usually cut you off and withdraw. Why? So they don't run the risk of being exposed to a new hurt. You know, if I'm not convinced I can control you, then I'll cut you off. Let me give you another face. Perfectionism. Any of you know anybody who's a perfectionist? The perfect performance, this is the idea behind it, the perfect performance will reduce your chance of failure or hurt. Now, I'm a teacher, so I teach things, but they're not always exclusive. In other words, there are other things that cause perfectionism. Y'all okay? Just like I did that a moment ago. Okay, let me give you another one. Another face of fear is addictions. Why addictions? Because we're trying to numb the pain and the fear. All sorts, you can pick them. Addictions. An addictive personality. Why? It's a fearful personality. And by the way, fear cannot coexist with faith. So if you're beginning to think, how do we deal with this? Short circuit the whole thing and go to the area of faith. You cannot, fear and faith do not coexist. And if you want to talk about the fear of the Lord, we can talk about that later. Not right now. We're dealing with emotionality. But that is a good topic. All right, go back to your diagram. What's at the bottom? What's right above it? Second most intense? Anger. What's right above anger? Fear. What's right above fear? All right, guilt. Guilt is a feeling of sadness or remorse that lets you know you've done something wrong. Holy Spirit convicts us, and we usually get this feeling of guilt. But God has not intended for us to walk around our lives guilt-ridden. It lets us know we've done something wrong. And initially, it's a very good emotion. How do you deal with your guilt? Come on, you Bible scholars, talk to me. How do you deal with guilt? You ask somebody's forgiveness. If I feel guilty because I did something to you, even to God, I ask forgiveness. I confess my sin. The forgiveness is given. It's exchanged. And that's the primary way we deal even in human relationships. There's one particular tool that I've taught here several times. It's how do you activate forgiveness in another person? How do you ask for forgiveness in such a way that they actually want to? Rather than, I'm sorry, yeah, than the I'm sorry response. That's huge. Why? Because at the foundation of everything, we have to learn how to give and receive forgiveness. That's really good, Bob. That's important. So guilt is this feeling of sadness or remorse for something that we've done. And if that be true, and it is, then what do you think false guilt is? Y'all can talk louder. I heard you talk. It's the same feeling of sadness or remorse for something you did not do, but you feel guilty for it. Would you like to know number one and number two? Number one are children of a divorce. Ouch. Inevitably, well, if I hadn't said that to Daddy, he wouldn't have left. And the fact is, it had nothing to do with the kids. That wasn't what was on the mind. It was a mother-father interaction. Divorce. Children of divorce. They're the number one purveyors of false guilt. You want to guess at number two? Sexual abuse. Let me tell you why. Show you how it works. We as a church do absolutely terrible in dealing with those that have been sexually abused. You've heard my son here deals with, has a ministry that deals, it's an anti-trafficking ministry. They are growing and blowing. He just came back from Nepal, Kathmandu, a big area, trafficking. But guess where the number one destination for trafficked kids is? Welcome to the States. And then all of a sudden, little kid, little 4, 5, 6 year old. How many of you have seen the movie Sound of Freedom? If you haven't, go see it. Take your tissues. They have actually contacted Ben, and they're sitting down with the possibility of doing something in that same nature with what he does. It's tough stuff, and that is a great movie to show you, give you a pretty good snapshot of what goes on out there. Little girl goes to her mama and says, "Grandpa, uncle," it's usually family member, "cousin, they were touching me where they shouldn't have been touching me." And what does mama do? Usually she'll console, but then hide. Why? Because she didn't have to deal with it. She didn't have to confront anybody about it. What does that communicate to that child? Well, it's really not that bad, or you did something to deserve it, and that's always one of the comebacks. Gosh. Children. What do we do in the church? We don't deal with it because we don't know how to deal with it. Because by and large, we don't have the foundation relationally, emotionally, like the stuff I'm teaching you right now, to deal with it. I've had the privilege of going into a couple of safe homes that we have where we'll have as many as 20 girls. They're usually all girls or all guys, the safe homes, and help them begin to understand their own emotionality and what's going on in them. You have to dumb it down to where a 10-year-old can understand it, but still, so they very quickly understand, I didn't do it. I don't want to communicate a victim mentality. I want to help them get through the stuff. I don't want them to get stuck in the victim mentality, but I want them to not have false guilt. I don't want you to think you did something or that this is okay. It's not okay. Are y'all okay? So we're talking about guilt or false guilt. All right, go back to your diagram. At the very bottom, come on, go with me again. Pain. Right above pain, anger focuses at the present and the past. Right above anger, fear. Fear, anxiety focuses at the future. I'm afraid it's going to happen again. Right above fear, guilt and false guilt. A feeling of sadness or remorse for something I did, or a feeling of sadness and remorse for something I did not do. Then right above that, do you have two words or one word? Okay, you have condemnation and shame. They're different from a teacher paradigm. They're different, but for now, I'm just going to lump them together and talk to you. It's probably the most complex of all the emotions. Condemnation causes us to feel badly about ourselves. Shame. Condemnation. A heaviness. When Adam and Eve were in the garden, I believe that in the creation of God, that they were covered with God's glory, had this incredible relationship with Him. And then something happened that interrupted all of that. And sin entered. And as a result, they began to hide. Why were they hiding? Condemnation and shame. Now, God had a way of dealing with that, but that was not supposed to happen. That wasn't in the big picture. Condemnation takes away your feeling of worth. Condemnation is always built upon a lie. It sabotages your worth, your value as a person. All right, let me give you an illustration. I was adopted. I've shared that with you before. In the recent year, 2 years, I've had the privilege of discovering my bio parents. My mother's deceased. My father is still alive over on the East Coast. Not real excited about connecting with me. That's okay. I gave him that option, laid it out that way. But all of my mother's family, in fact, just not yesterday, the day before yesterday, had lunch with one of my first cousins who is in San Antonio. Been able to reconnect. So I've always struggled, of all these emotions, the one that I've struggled with the most is condemnation. Why? Remember, condemnation's built upon a lie. Here's the lie that I have forever fed on. I've slayed that dragon, but for a long time have fed on it. Here's the lie. There must be something wrong with you. Otherwise, why did your parents give you up? And like it or not, any of you physically adopted, naturally physically adopted, all of you raised by family? I was teaching this to a bunch of pastors in Africa. And I asked the question, man, there are more than 1,000 pastors there. I asked that same question. Nobody raised their hand. I said, man, that cannot be. And this many people, nobody's gone through an adoption process. And then my host, who's a great guy, their bishop of the Celebration Churches, Mark Kariuki, great guy. He said, Bob, you need to understand, when a baby is born here, number one, it's born to the tribe. Number two, to the family. Number three, to the individual parents. So they're never given, we don't consider adoption as long as somebody in the tribe picks them up and takes care of them. And it's usually within the family. But I'd always struggle with that because I was struggling with the lie, something must be wrong with me. Why did my parents give me up? You'll find out a little bit later, the keys, one of the primary keys to dealing with condemnation is discovering the lie and replace it with truth. Discovering the lie and replacing it with truth. Your pastor has done a great job and put together a great mini-series on shame. He's done quite a bit of work on that. So if you need some extra stuff on shame, he's got it and can download to you. All right, back to your emotional cup. Most intense emotion sinks to the bottom from that place, affects all the rest, and it is pain. Hurt, pain. Right above that, most common expression of pain, anger. Faces towards the present, faces towards the past. Has many faces. Right above anger is fear and anxiety. While anger faces the present and past, fear faces the future. I'm afraid it's going to happen again. Fear is an antithesis of faith. I'm just giving you little bullet points that you need to remember. Right above fear is guilt and false guilt. Feeling of sadness or remorse for something you've done. Originally a good emotion, but God has given us a tool. He does not want you walking around feeling guilty. He's given us tools like forgiveness, the giving and receiving of forgiveness, a very powerful tool, a powerful relational tool that all of us need to learn how to handle. Gary Chapman writes a book. I love basically everything Gary does. Writes a book. Most of you know him for the five love languages. If you've read that book, you've read Gary. Okay, but then he also has another book that deals with five keys to forgiveness, which I stole and compartmentalized, made it into a couple of page message so you could digest it real quick. Absolutely terrific. If you're a book reader, go get that and read it. It'll help you with the forgiveness area. Right above the guilt is condemnation and shame. Again, the things you need to remember about condemnation and shame. It robs you of your worth, robs you of your worth, robs you of your... My wife and I developed little sayings through our marriage over years. This year, we're on our big 5-0. Y'all have already done yours, haven't you? Oh, you're on 52. Really? Oh, you were a baby. And, you know, over the years, you develop these little sayings with each other. If I'm saying something that kind of demeans her, or she doesn't like it, she'll look at me and she'll say, "Get off my cloud. Get off my cloud." In other words, if I want to dream, I'm a realist. If I want to dream, don't pull me down. Don't heap something on me that devalues me. Give me freedom to soar. And I get the message. I'm sorry, honey.
Thanks for having that.
Yeah. I noticed Jenna was writing furiously over there. Oh, gosh. If you guys were smart, you'd leave them at home and you'd come alone. So you could. All right. Condemnation and shame. What? It's built upon a lie. You have to discover the lie, replace it with truth. Okay. Now, I'm not right now telling you how to deal with all these. I'm giving you a concept. You know, at another time, we can come back and walk through each of them. Because honestly, I have series of messages on every one of these. Dealing with fear is not just a one-off kind of thing. Some of you sitting here struggle with anxiety. And it is not a little thing. It has bit you in the butt most of your life. And it has a way of clouding your perception of things. You look at things through the eyes of anxiety rather than faith. Anyway, we can tackle these one at a time later, and that'll be a fun thing to do. I'll just announce to Paul, we're dealing with fear this Saturday, and we'll talk about is fear and how to deal with it. All right, at the top right above condemnation and shame, you have another word. What is the word? Stress. Any of you felt any stress over the last year? Mm-hmm. Stress is not really emotion. Here's what you need to remember. Stress magnifies the emotion. In other words, let's say you have an anger struggle and on a scale of 1 to 10, you have a 3 on anger. A little bit of stress will cause it to act like a 6. Stress magnifies existing emotions. Okay, go back and look at your cup again. Look at that diagram. Now I want you to reflect on your own life for just a moment. If you came with someone, you're going to have a moment to talk with them, but I want you to answer this question. What is the emotion you most often struggle with? And then secondly, I want you to answer the question, how often do you struggle with it? Is it a daily thing or an occasional thing? Okay, I want to give you just a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. Which of these emotions do you most often struggle with? You came with someone, go ahead and share with them, talk with them for a minute. If you didn't come with someone, you can just sit back and enjoy the fun. Or go get another coffee. Yeah, Ernie, she's here. You realize there's a myriad of other emotions, but we've zeroed in on five of the most common, most intense emotions that people struggle with. That's why we've limited it to that. Now, if you're having trouble identifying which emotion you struggle with the most, you can probably ask your spouse and they will help you with that. If you need another minute, slip your hand up and I'll give you another minute. We okay? You need another minute? You're not through telling them all the... Okay.
I ran out of paper.
All right, over time, when we have those emotions and they are left unprocessed or not processed completely, then our heart, our emotional reservoir, our emotional cup, if you please, becomes maxed out, saturated, full, and that's when we begin to spill. Spillage is different for everybody, but will exhibit symptoms. Let me give you a few of the most common symptoms of a full emotional cup. At the top of the list, depression. Right behind it, running a close second, just nose, beat out by a nose, is anxiety. Low self-esteem, low sexual desire. And in order to avoid some of the pain, we escape into things like alcohol, drugs, pornography, TV, working, shopping, sports, and anything that consumes our time and gives us a place to escape reality. You put your own in there. And when our emotional cup is full, it may affect us also physically. Such things as high blood pressure, lower back pain, skin rashes, migraine, headaches. That's a biggie. Stomach aches, chronic fatigue, sleeping too little, sleeping too much, eating too little, eating too much. Outbursts of anger, controlling others. And part of the difficulty is that when you go to a medical doctor, and I highly respect, love, recommend doctors. I'm not an anti-doctor guy. But when we do, many times we are just working with the symptoms, not with the sources. So they'll give you pills to help you deal with the symptoms, to control your migraines, affect your migraines, your chronic fatigue, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of looking beneath and seeing what the real source is. I believe God wants us to know our hearts. And most of us know our hearts limitedly. He wants us to understand what causes us to be the people that we are. All right, guys, this is a good place to take a little break. Let's take about a 10-minute break and allow you to refuel. And then we'll meet back and we're going to begin to tackle how do you deal with the emotional cup? How do you work through it? All right.
All right, good morning. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Refueled? Focused? Tanned? Rested? Ready? Okay, maybe not tanned. Nobody responded. It's just like, it's useless. All right, Dr. Bob,
si, you're on. Yes, yo es listo. That's for Dan, so he'll know what we're doing. All right, let me talk to you a little bit about some of the results when you have a full emotional cup, and then we're going to talk about how you deal with it. Number one, when you have a full emotional cup, you'll suffer emotionally. I mean, look at the diagram. Look at the cup. It's not really a very pretty thing, is it? You become emotionally distraught, hurt, anger, fear, anxiety, guilt, condemnation, stress. Pretty miserable. When I conclude seeing a counselee, I'll have them write down their story. It's a tool I use to kind of help them get some closure and to move on. I want to read you, this is used with permission, but let me read you one of the stories that I got back. She says, when I was 12 years old, my father left us. He walked out, and although it hurt a lot, I never really talked to anybody about it. My brothers and sisters were younger than me, so I didn't want to talk to them. My mother was devastated and consumed by her own pain, and I was too embarrassed to talk to my friends because I didn't know how they would react. So I just tried to stuff it and forget it. But years later, I began to realize it was still an unresolved issue in my life. Several years into marriage, I felt this constant sense of anger which just simmered below the surface. At first, I became pretty adept at controlling my anger, only occasionally would yell at my kids. At times, I lost control. I also became very insecure and anxious about my relationship with my husband. He had always been a loving husband, very dedicated and faithful, but whenever we'd have a quarrel or a disagreement, deep inside, I was afraid that he was going to leave me. This fear caused me to be overly jealous and controlling. What's the number one response with fear? Defensive response? Control. The fear caused me to be jealous and controlling. It almost ruined our marriage. All through the years, I've been faithful to read my Bible, to attend church, tried to believe what was right and behave right, but it wasn't working. I tried all the claiming things in the life in Christ, but it was very elusive. She says, then one day I saw the emotional cup diagram and realized that there was still a lot of anger in my cup. The anger was directly related to the pain I sustained when our father abandoned our family. The unprocessed pain had also produced fear in me. I was anxious that it was going to happen to me again, this time as a wife. And there was probably some guilt in my cup because I decided to never talk to my father again, even though he tried to contact me on several occasions. Yes, I can testify that the painful emotions don't just go away with time. They stay with us and they rob us of day-to-day joy. Wow. What a response. When we have a full emotional cup, we suffer emotionally. Number two. When we have a full emotional cup, we're unable to process positive emotions. Here's what I want you to come away with. Here's what I want you to be your takeaway. When you're struggling with so many negative emotions, there's not a lot of room for the positive emotions. Now, when they can get in there, when you do have an experience that results in a positive emotion, one of the ways we deal with this full negative cup is by having positive experiences, and it pushes out some of the negative. So it is a good thing, but I have to say it happens rarely. It doesn't happen often. Number three, when we have a full emotional cup, our personal spillage will adversely affect all of our relationships. It doesn't only affect us, it affects our closest relationships. Fear causes us to be controlling. Unresolved anger causes us to say things that are hurtful. Guilt causes us, and condemnation and shame cause us to hide our lives and develop a secret life. Now imagine two people coming together to be married. Both of them have an emotional cup that is already full. do you think they might have some problems ahead of them? You think they might struggle with their interactions, even with their perceptions? Number four, your emotional cup goes with you wherever you go. I've seen it in marriage time and time and time again. A couple comes and sits in front of me. They want to work through stuff. We try to work through stuff. And it doesn't make it, so they end up splitting up. A little bit later, one or both come back, and now they have a new partner, and they want to do some premarital counseling. And if I've seen them before, I have to be very delicate because I'm not allowed to disclose certain things. So I meet with them privately and I simply let them know, your emotional cup goes with you wherever you go. And until we deal with that, you are destined for a hellacious ride with the second relationship or the third or the fourth. Invariably, they don't listen. They go ahead and get married again. And guess what happens? Within a few months, guess who's sitting across my desk? All I want you to hear is that that emotional cup goes with you wherever you go. And by the way, they'll say things like, I just don't love them anymore. I feel numb. Those are all expressions of a full emotional cup. Your inability to feel positive emotions, your numbness is a warning light of a full emotional cup. All right. What happens then when you deal with them positively? I'll give you a couple of things, then I'm going to show you how to do it. Number one, painful symptoms may subside. Notice how I threw the word may in there with emphasis. The painful symptoms may subside. In other words, if you have lower back pain that is due to an emotional trauma, and we deal and help process that trauma, and then all of a sudden that back pain begins to relieve and to ease. That happens. But what if your back pain is because you picked up a heavy box the wrong way? I don't care how much you deal with your symptoms, the lower back pain is not because of your trauma, your emotional trauma. It's because you picked up the box the wrong way. And invariably, when I teach this, I will have people come up to me afterwards and say, well, you know those symptoms of the spillage that are coming out? I have all of those. And I have to calm them down because those symptoms can come from other things as well, is what I want you to hear. So that's why I say when you learn how to process emotions, painful symptoms may subside if the emotional pain was the source. Good enough? And as a result, you're able to enjoy more positive emotions. That's number two. You're able to enjoy more positive emotions. Now you have capacity because you've emptied out some of your cup. All right, how do you do it? That's what y'all want to know. That's why you're here. We'll do that next time when we... Scotty blocks the door. You can't leave. Okay, number one, you have to discover and own your hurt, your pain. You have to discover and own your pain. So many times we're able to see the emotionality of another, but we're not able to see our own. We're able to see the source of the emotionality in another, but we're not able to see our own. We're quick to say to the other person, you have daddy issues, but we don't see our own. So you have to discover, I'm going to show you how to do it. I'll give you a tool to help you at the end. You have to discover it, then you have to own it. I don't watch Dr. Phil, not because I don't like him. I just don't have time for that stuff. But he has a saying that I picked up from one of his books. And he says this, You cannot change what you don't own. You cannot change what you don't own. You got to own it. I like that. You got to own it. Here's the concept, and here's what we're going after. Well, if I learn to process these, will I finally get rid of that whole thing? Yes, you can. We're going after what we call the Genesis pain. Where did it all begin? Because most of the pain sources, not all, don't put me into a box of exclusives. Not all, but most of your pain sources occur during your formative years. What are those? Those are the years that your emotions are going through their formation. Well, when is that? Basically between 2 and 12, 13, 14, 15, something in that bracket. Depending on you, your maturity, your relationships, etc. And our desire is to help you break through these areas and get to the Genesis pain and slay that dragon, and so we can go ahead and move forward. So then you have a healthy heart. Remember the sower and the seed, the parable, the different kinds of soil. So now you have healthy soil that God can plant seeds into, and it produces the character of Christ in your life. You got to discover it and own it. I'll give you a tool to help you discover in just a moment. Number two, you have to share your pain. Yeah, I don't like that. There's a group of guys that have become notorious for not sharing their stuff. My oldest daughter has a number of friends that are spec op guys. In fact, she's opened up some stores, some of them after they've stepped out of their special forces. They own some stores that specialize in clothing just for first line responders. And anyway, but that whole group of guys are notorious because they've been taught to stuff their emotions. Why? It's survival technique. And they've been taught to stuff it and stuff it and stuff it and stuff it. And they've seen so much horrific stuff that pretty soon their emotional cup is not just overflowing. It's And they're unwilling to share it with someone. Why? Because they've been taught not to talk about it. And the very thing that they need, we've de-equipped them. They're not able to deal with it. And that's why you have so many of the problems and so many of the suicides and so much of this stuff that I've sat and listened to them. Man, they'll make you bawl if they'll talk to you. And I'd say 99 out of 100, they're not going to talk to you. They'll talk to a buddy who's been there, but they're not going to talk to the rest of you. You have to be able to share it. Number one, share it first with the Lord. So underneath the second one, discover and own it. Number two, share your pain, share the hurt. Share it first with the Lord. I want you to remember this psalm. Psalm 62 verse 8 says, trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. There is a direct connection between your ability to trust and you pouring out your heart. Here's what I do. I go find a place where I'm alone, usually in my car, find a place that's pretty much some solitude out by the lake where I can turn on some music, worship music that I like and that connects me with God. And I begin to pour my heart out to God. God, this is what's going on in my life. This is what's happening, da, 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 da. And I just kind of pour it out. And not that he doesn't already know, but there is something therapeutic about you being able to verbalize what is happening in your life from your perspective. And then, and only then, after you poured that out, does God begin to give you his perspective. The trouble is we ask for God's perspective and we never take the time to pour out our hearts. And it is a tool, it is a discipline that you've got to learn how to do. And most of us don't like to do it because we don't like to revisit the sources of our pain. We like to kind of get that out of the way and just come on and go on down the road. So we stuff it. Pour out your heart before him. All right. So we have to share our heart first with the Lord, and then secondly, with a trusted friend or counselor. Now, if any of you ever end up in front of me, one of the things that I do, I will usually have you bring a trusted friend or counselor, because I'm not going to be the one that you call all the time. I'm not there for that purpose. I'm there to equip you, to help you learn. I've done that with Ernie. He didn't come to me. Someone else came, and Ernie was his kind of go-to. Anytime he had a struggle, he'd come to Ernie and ask for some help. And here's the point. It's got to be someone that you're able to be honest with and invariably and transparent with. Invariably, guys will say, "Can it be my wife?" Because they feel they're safe with her to some degree. It can, and I tell them this, yes, it can, unless they're the source of problem. So it's always guy to guy and girl to girl. I don't ever allow mixed, because we're at an emotional level that'll go too deep, and you could find yourself in what we call emotional adultery real quick, where your intimacy level with that other person has become that, it has exceeded that that you have with your spouse. That's a no-no. Yes, it's a danger zone. Exactly right. Okay? So then you could pour your heart out to them. Now, why are you doing that? Why are you rehearsing this? Bob calls John and we sit down. I said, "John, I'm really struggling with this." He says, "What's going on? Talk to me. Tell me." And part of the reason I'll have them bring their friend is so I can train that friend in what to do and how to do it, what to say and how to say it. He'll say, "Well, I'm going through this and I'm going through that and I'm going through this. And what I'm looking for from that other person is for them to learn how to listen empathetically." When we teach counselors, that's an entire section. Learn how to listen so that the other person knows they have been heard. If any of you have ever raised teenagers, you will have already experienced this. Sometimes they'll say to you, "You're not hearing me." They'll couch it in the phrase, "You don't listen." It means you're not hearing. In other words, they don't know that you have felt them. Empathy has the ability to feel the other person's pain. And you cannot give the comfort necessary until you have felt their pain. "Blessed are those who mourn," Matthew 5. "For they shall be," come on, comforted. You go do a little word study. The word "mourn" doesn't mean those who are crying or weeping because someone's passed away. The word actually means to have allowed yourself to feel the pain. "Blessed are those who allow themselves to feel the pain, and they will be comforted." You cannot go through and process these emotions without going through them. You can't go around them, guys. Are we okay? That's why I want you to learn how to share with another person. You don't just share with anybody. I'm very select about who knows what's going on in my life. As a pastor, I don't do that with anybody in the congregation. Why? Because I've had, and I'm presently coaching pastors where they've done that and things have blown up. And all of a sudden, little things that they shared in confidence have leaked out. And now they're dealing with a church split. And the last thing you need is for you to feel that you cannot have a safe place to vent, to pour out. I don't care who you are. You need that. Are we okay? Is everybody okay with that? Because the next number you have to share your hurt, first with the Lord, with another person, is to receive comfort. Now, this isn't the time to try to be strong. This isn't the time to try to explain what's going on within you. It's a time to receive some comfort. when you pour your heart out, there's two verses in the Bible that use the same word but have nearly opposite meanings. One of them says, bear your own burdens. The other one says, bear ye one another's burdens. Okay, which is it? Well, the first one, bear your own burdens, the word translated into the English burden is actually a Greek word which means responsibility or load. Bear your own responsibility. Cowboy up. Go brush your teeth, clean your car, do what you know to do, be responsible. But the other word, bear ye one another's burdens, is a word of sadness and heaviness. Many times the Old Testament uses a similar word when it talks about a prophet and says, the oracle of the Lord, Ezekiel. And it uses a word, the burden of the Lord, this that Ezekiel's about to tell you. There is something about the heart of God that he wants to impart to Ezekiel. There's a weightiness that comes with the sadness. And that one, he says, bear one another's burdens. Come alongside someone and help lift that load up. So when somebody is coming alongside you and you're able to pour your heart out, you want to be able to back the pickup truck, the dump truck to their heart, take part of their load and drive it off and drive it away. Help alleviating part of their load. Bear ye one another's burdens. Those are Galatian passages, if you're looking for them. Are y'all okay with that? Does that make some sense? Okay, I told you I'd give you a tool. We're at the tool. You've been good. Let me give you the tool. When I'm doing this, my style, my model of counseling is what we call a tool belt model, which we developed. It's where we identify between 20 and 30 specific tools. This is one of those tools that I'm giving you. And the couple, the individual sits in front. I walk through this stuff with them. I teach them. I give them a copy of it. And then I give them homework where they have to actually do it. Many times concerning this one, I will sit right there with them because as they do their first piece of homework, because the tool is what we call the pain journal. How many of you journal? Good, good. Golly, we got a pretty good section of journalists here. Excellent, excellent. Okay, this type of journaling is pretty much the same. I'm going to give you four questions to answer, but I'm going to ask you to only do it once a week at the most. Now, why am I going to do that? Because when you turn and take this inward look into painful areas, it can get heavy. And if you're more the prophetic, creative type, it can actually get dark. And I don't want you to go there too much. All right? So many times I'll have the person, especially if I know they're that prophetic creative type, I'll have them do it right there so I'm there with them. Here's question number one. You're going to answer four questions with your journal entry. Four questions. Number one, what is the most dominant painful emotion you've experienced over the past 72 hours? Most dominant painful emotion. Now, hopefully you had some good ones. But what's the most dominant painful one? The last 3 days, 72 hours. Number two, second question. What caused it? And at this point, I want you to answer these little questions. Put a parenthesis and put who, what, when, where, and why. Of course, you're given your perspective. Who, what, when, where, why. Number three, have I felt this emotion before? my spouse yelled at me, said something I don't think was true. What caused it? Well, I didn't tell him the truth, and there was a partial truth, and he thinks I lied to him intentionally, and I go through the who, what, when, where, why, try to articulate it. Have I felt this emotion before? Yes, I felt this fear of rejection, this fear of being discovered, things I've hidden in my life, the fear of being uncovered. You ever had those dreams of being naked somewhere and you're in public and you're trying to get out of it or figure it out? Have I felt this emotion before? Try to articulate it. If so, when? If so, when? Now, men and women, again, this is a kind of a prayer journal. I want you to do this, answer these in concert with the Holy Spirit. So you're praying your way through these questions. Holy Spirit, bring these things to mind. Help me understand. Help me articulate. Help me see. You're doing this in conjunction with Him. And then number four, I shared my pain with, were you able to pour it out with the Lord? And then did you have a buddy, a best friend, a counselor that you were able to pour it out with? I shared my friend with, shared my pain with, and I want to see a name there. And in addition to that, did I receive comfort? Were they able to connect with me? Were they able to back up their dump truck to my heart, and I felt some of that unload? Now, men and women, what you're going to find happen, especially with that question number three, have I felt this emotion before? Your first responses as you do this kind of thing will be your most recent one. Oh yeah, 2 weeks ago I felt that. Yeah, no, last month I did that. Oh yeah, about a year ago. And then all of a sudden you'll be going through this on a weekly basis, doing this. Do all your other journaling the rest of the time. But you're just doing this one time a week. Then all of a sudden God's going to bring to remember something that happened to you when you were 10 years old. When you were 8 years, what's happening? You're getting back to the Genesis pain. And little by little, healing comes. Now, part of the reason I also have you sharing this with a trusted friend is so that we can do and pray some inner healing into your heart. And I use a term that's very familiar. Inner healing is a very familiar term to a lot of you. I'm not going to teach on that right now. That's a whole big caboodle all by itself. But it's where we are asking God to come and partner with us, asking Holy Spirit to partner with us, reach across the annals of time. How many of you realize time is a sense world commodity, not a spirit world commodity? That's why a day is 1,000 years, 1,000 years is a day. That's why when you step across this portal of time and into the reality of God's kingdom, in other words, you die and you go to heaven. When you step across that portal, you'll bump into a friend who says, oh yeah, I just got here yesterday. And they've been dead for 50 years. Why? Because time is a sensual commodity. In inner healing, that's where we're asking Holy Spirit to come and to do what you and I cannot do. Lord, I ask that you replace that pain that they experienced at childhood and replace it with wholeness, with healing, and so forth. Okay, again, that is another part. I'm not trying to give you everything all at once, but I want you to have enough to understand how, when he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, that word salvation doesn't have to do with being born again. It has to do, it's the word sozo, has to do with being untangled, to being healed, most frequently translated, delivered. Work out your deliverance with fear and trembling. Okay, so it's a step-by-step thing. Now, I'm giving you a practical tool to how you can begin to process some of those painful wounds. Now, again, I already said to you at the start, there's another way, which is also effective, but it's not as intentional, if I can use that word, as strategic. And it's every time you experience a good emotion, that good emotion can displace some of the negative. But the trouble is the negative emotions have affected your brain patterns, and we have to renew the mind as well. And if you don't change how you think, then you're going to keep on doing what you keep on doing. That's called the renewing of the mind. That's another one of those tools. All right, I'm going to pause here. Questions. Anything you want to throw in, throw out, or throw up? No. Anybody else have a... Yep. You being able to articulate what that emotion is very important. I would suggest to you, if you have a best friend, someone that you could process that with, they can back and forth with you. Well, sometimes that's anger, but the other times it comes out differently. And it's so that pain is having different faces in your life. And sometimes that's what causes the confusion of being able to articulate exactly what it is. But it is... Right. It can have some different characteristics, and it doesn't hurt just to jot them all down as you're trying to process it. But that's a good question without an easy answer. Yes, ma'am. Are you just holding up the pole? Okay. Yep. Yes. Yes. According. Yes. 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 Yes to all those questions. I did. I really did. Right at the start. According to a couple of things, you will have certain those undealt with emotions develop triggers. You call them buttons. He pushed my button. And around certain groups, they'll know your buttons and they'll be more prone to push your buttons. You'll have difficulty there. Also, according to the strength of your will, what does that mean? That means sometimes some of you are very good at managing your own emotions. And part of it is a shutdown tool, but and it allows you to get through situations, through relationships, through conversations, without blowing up. You're able to listen and nod, and you're copacetic in your responses. Others of you, you're not able to do that. Somebody says the word Trump, and all of a sudden you blow up. I just had to throw that out there. Never mind. You know, it certainly seems to be out there. So, you know, those can also qualify or quantify your ability to function, and what we're trying, you know, and some of these, there's a whole smattering, like anger management. These are tools that help you manage symptoms. They're good because they help you function and keep going to that extent, but they're not good because many times they stop you from really getting to the source of pain, and you never really deal with the problem. You just manage it. Yes, Ernie? Well, the most difficult person for a counselor to help are those that are in denial, those who are unwilling to go there. I can't help you. All I can do is pray for you and let God bring you to a place where you're willing. And believe you me, He wants you there more than you do, and He'll get you there where you're willing. Am I referring to Egyptians?
Yeah, the Nile.
Oh, did y'all hear that? He wanted to know if I was referring to Egyptians because I talked about denial. Yeah, I'll work on that one. You're an Egyptian. Yes, sir. So, Dan. Y'all know Dan?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Who?
So,
the woman that smiles at the future. I know that's hard for, you know, everyone. But what would you say, like, she prays for the Lord and maybe seek God's sovereignty and his promises? And,
you know, when you use the term smile at the future, that can have a couple of applications to it. When I hear it, I think of a woman of faith or a man of faith, that they've been able to overcome their fears and anxieties with faith. So they are faith focused. Anywhere they're sensing God's assignment is in their life, they're attaching faith to that and they're locked and loaded. They're ready to go. You know, but sometimes that particular phrase is applied to denial. You know, okay, well, they're just not realistic. You know, well, which is more real, his kingdom or our kingdom? Which is more real, what is invisible or what is visible? I mean, you can go read the stories in the Old Testament of Elijah and sending his servant out, and he's all Twitter-pated because the armies are all surrounding, and he sends his servant out, and his servant sees the armies of the Lord. Comes back in and things are really different. Why? Because the unseen trumped the seen. So in that case, it might be called denial, but, you know, again, I would call it faith. You know, they're able to see into the spirit realm and see what God is seeing, and therefore their attitude is totally different. Yes, sir. You know, that's a good question, because I can't crawl on the inside of them. You know, usually what gets projected from that person, if they're unwilling to extrapolate or to talk to you on both sides of the question. Okay, well, I'm seeing it this way and you're seeing it this way. When they're able to see both sides of it and to articulate that, I'd say they're in faith of whatever the problem is. You said they're in denial. Denial of what? They're in denial. We have this problem. They're in denial. Okay, let's talk about the problem and let's see both sides, the pros and the cons. Let's take both perspectives. And if they're able to do that, then I'd say they're in faith in what they're doing. If they're not able to do that, they're probably in denial. In other words, they've locked in on one thing and they're not willing to even look at the other side. Does that make sense?
How do you overcome fear?
Fear to open up. How do you overcome that? Well, goodness.
Being able to trust.
Yeah, that's what it's going to get down to, isn't it? Whether or not they trust you. Because if they really trust you, even using the illustration of my spec op friends, part of the reason, part's their training, and they've got to get through that. And that's another beast. But the other part is they don't trust you. Why don't they trust you? Because you're not going to know what they've been through. You don't understand where they're coming from. You know, you can try manipulation, offer them a nice meal. No, I don't. That's a tough one. Or push their button. So, see, I told you it was there. There's that little sneaky thing is hiding. Anybody else? Are y'all okay? Does this make some sense to you? Okay. So I'm going to challenge you with this. I tell you what I will do. because I love y'all so much, I will send the full, all my notes, which I give to my counselees. It's everything that I've said and more. I will send them to Paul. And if you want them, you email him and he'll, or do I send it to? Send it to Cindy. Excuse me. I'll send it to Cindy. And if he said it'll be better for everybody. In other words, you'll at least get it, you know. No, you may not. Oh, gosh. You go to Cindy, send it to Cindy, say, I want Bob's notes from Saturday morning, and she'll send you this. And again, you know, I am using these with permission. I did not write them. They are under copyright. And so be respectful. Yes, ma'am. How can we get access to the tools that you mentioned? I did, didn't I? That was a mistake. I just have one.
Oh.
Gosh. That's a good question. We're in the process of trying to put things. I do this. This is obviously part of my living, but I do this online quite a bit with couples, with groups. We're trying to do that on a larger scale where we can, you know, for this particular tool would usually be at least a two-weeker. I meet with the people that I'm coaching right now, and that's what we call it, that I'm coaching. We'll meet online. We do an hour and a half, and I literally walk through this with them the way I've walked through it with you, and they get opportunity to ask questions, et cetera, et cetera, the same kind of thing. Then I give them the homework, which is the last part that you, the pain journal. And then they have to fill that out and send it to me before they can attend the next one. And by the way, when I'm doing this with counselees, they bring their pain journal with them so I can see it.
So the tools are basically like, I'm going to tear down an image. I have to take the
harbor. Absolutely.
And I have to take them out.
There's certain things, you know, for example, the one I've taught y'all on activating forgiveness. How do you make an effective confession? Confess your sins in order that you may be given. How do you make an effective apology that causes the other person to actually want to forgive you? Because there are certain things that other person is listening for in that apology that activates them to want to forgive. For my wife, she wants to hear the plan of change. It's one of the five. Okay, honey, how are you gonna, what's the plan so this doesn't happen again? For me, with her, all I want to hear is the sincerity of regret. And once I hear that within her voice, and she says, I'm sorry, and I know she means it, I'm done. Man, I'm there. You know, that's all I need to hear. I don't need to hear any plan or any of this other hoopla. To me, hoopla. To her, absolutely not. Okay, you know, these are all tools that are effective. They become a tool belt, just like any of you guys or gals that do any building, and you have a tool belt, and you hang your hammer, and you hang all your different things in pockets, and it becomes a relationship tool belt to give you tools to be able to function and even train others, your kids and others, and how to be successful in their relationships. We're working on putting that on a larger scale. I'm sorry, that's not a better answer. Okay. You can do that. The best thing to do is to contact your pastor. He has all my contact. And you may already have it by now. You've been around. And I'm very happy to do that. Yes?
So I have this tool that it's like this immediate forgiveness button, almost like a hole at the bottom of my bucket. Is that bad or good?
I would rather you have that hole than not have a forgiveness. You know, sometimes you know, the quick forgiveness without being able to examine cause and effect many times is an emotional response out of what I need. In other words, I'm forgiving them because I need acceptance. And it's not necessarily what is going to be the foundation for faith for that relationship. Why? Because I just gave you an emotional, oh yeah, man, I forgive you. Why? Because I need to be needed. I need you to, whatever. I want you to want me. Yeah. And that always does not always produce the forgiveness that lasts and connects with that other person. And the forgiveness is the foundation of faith. That's where we got to go. You don't have forgiveness as your foundation, then faith is not going to build and last.
It's interesting because when I heard him say that, mm-hmm. To my life, not
yep.
a core
right.
I need to work through. I think so much easier for me to just forgive and move on to people that I don't interact with and I don't value, have a deep, meaningful relationship with them on an individual basis. But it's like, if I need to forgive someone who's part of my core group, that takes intention.
So he's describing is two sides of forgiveness. Forgiveness has a connection to you and a benefit to you. It keeps you from getting cancer because you have forgiveness. I can tell by the looks of some of you, you've not read any of those studies. There's studies that directly connect unforgiveness and some of these maladies that we struggle with. But then there's the other side, the other person, the long-term, the relationships, those more intimate relationships, where we got to be sure that connects on their side as well. So that bridge of forgiveness is solid on both sides. And that's good for long term. Scotty says, man, I don't want to have to deal with this. I'll give them forgiveness. See ya. You know, and that's similar to that whole forgiveness you're talking about. Yeah, good response. Dan, you've already used yours.
I wanted to just comment on some practical stuff. Where you mentioned here on the, you know, just...
On the symptoms? The
symptoms, yeah, like, you know, just TV, work, and all that stuff.
Escape.
Those escapes are usually where it's hard for me to get somebody to get out of that rhythm, and I tell them, have you talked to God already and repented? And then when you practice that, you'll be able to start, okay, now you can work with your spouse or your friend or...
Right.
But they, you know, they stay in a pool of like, just, you know, stuff to do, even good stuff.
Yeah. Keep flying around the field and they never land.
Yeah. And so that will keep us in all those things, denial.
Yes.
You know, everything. Yeah. So it's yeah. a practice of like forgiveness and start that journal you said is yep. perfect.
It's just a tool to reengage. Yeah. Exactly. That's good. That's good.
Full circle.
Yep. Yep. Anybody else? Some of you very quiet. Some of you. Where's your wife?
It's too cold with her foot.
Okay. Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. I miss her. Tell her I missed her. Okay. I'm sure you will. Come in the door. She'll have you by the throat.
I like what John said about the whole. I'm pretty quick to forgive, but what I found that if you don't process it, there's baggage. That hole leads into something.
You know, when we get into the processing, you have a soul, mind, will, and emotions. I'll tell you this real quick. And you have to learn how to process with all three of those faculties. You process things mentally, emotionally, and volitionally. And there's some keys to how you do that. And when you're just doing this quick thing where you do no processing, then it doesn't enable the forgiveness to actually be a long-lasting thing that's going to produce a foundation upon which you can build faith. Sure, absolutely.
If you do the forgiveness, like they're saying,
uh-huh.
Can you go back and think about it?
Of course.
Do you forgiveness?
Well, you know, yeah, when you go back, hey, I was thinking. And then you might just give explanation to them. You know, da-da-da-da-da, and I was realized this, and I didn't really say anything to you about that, but please forgive me for that, you know. Just explain. Good catch. Yeah, good. Yes, sir. Right.
Versus, yes, there may be 1,000 times having to forgive someone in the outer circle. Eventually, those pebbles will, they may not register at that moment.
Right.
But is there a point where those pebbles end up tipping that scale?
Well, you know, that's good. Yeah, I get you. You know, the level of the relationship has a lot to do with how the transactions go down. You know, you're talking about a boulder in your wife. That's probably, I'm taking that to mean the boulder she's going to put on your head if it doesn't get dealt with. I get it. I get what you're saying. But yes, a lot of these little ones that are, I don't want to use the word disregarded, but to some degree, they're not fully processed, you know, result in what we refer to as incomplete forgiveness. And the sweet gal over here brought that up. You know, okay, kind of go back later and take a few more steps on that, and if so, do I need to ask their forgiveness again? Well, once you begin to fully process that, it may be again and again and again as God shows you more pieces of it as you look at it a little bit deeper. But yes, I think those pebbles, if you just toss them out, can eventually create an imbalance in you, yeah. You know, at first, what Scotty was mentioning, he does that enable for his, so he can continue to function. Because if every little thing weighed him down and he had to fully process every little thing as it comes by, he would be spending all day on his face, you know. So he's developed a way to walk as he deals with those things that are significant and the relationships that are significant in his life and significant in his assignment, what God has assigned him to do. And then the others, he gives the forgiveness, but it's not necessarily completely processed with that individual, that other person. Why? Well, I don't need that. They're not at that level in my life to where they're not the boulder.
Right. And I guess to put it in different ways, you drive up and down the highway,
mm-hmm.
a little pebble hits, you're like,
what? Yep.
But then you hit a pothole, and it's like, now I need to be
yep.
concerned about that.
Yep.
But if you take a 10-hour trip and you keep getting hit,
yep.
Here,
yep.
And then you get out
and
you're like,
yeah. Golly. Looked like a shotgun. Yeah.
And you look at it and look like you've been through hell damage. I guess that's what I was trying to get.
Yeah. No, I think you have a valid point. A lot of these little things all stacked up can pull a weight in your own emotional heart. And they can fill up your emotional cup with a lot of pebbles, not bigger things, but smaller things. Yeah. Good point. Right. It could also have an ability to push a button, pull a trigger, if it's related to that boulder. And all of a sudden you just get a little pebble. It's not a big deal. But then all of a sudden you're making a big deal out of it. Why? Well, it's connected to the boulder. Love you guys. Appreciate you. Any final questions you want to throw out? Or observations? Tomorrow we're going to do something really special, really, really special. We are going to install, is that okay to say any of this?
You can say
it now. I'm already out. I've been outed. installing Scotty and Jana as elders, leaders, whatever term we use. And so we'll have a fun time doing that, and I'll have a little charge/admonition I'll be giving them, but it's really for everybody. So it'll be fun. It'll be a lot of fun. Different. Different. All right. Paul, anything you want to say or do?